Cave of Solitude, Episode 12, Hulk Gray.
Got Bruce Banner, belted by Gamma Ray, turned into the Hulk.
Ain't he on Glamour Ray?
Wrecking the town with the power of a bull.
Ain't no monster clown who is as lovable
as ever-loving Hulk. Hulk.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude. As you heard Daphne J in the intro say, this is episode 12. This is an official MIS installment. And this week, we're going to be discussing Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale's final installment in the Marvel Color series for Daredevil Spider-Man. This week's going to be Hulk Gray. Daph J, speak to me. How you doing, my babe?
I'm good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Feeling a little tired? Long day?
I'm having my milk and cookies.
Having your milk and cookies before bedtime?
Getting ready for my 6 to 8 hour nap.
Is that what, and you know what? It's funny. Is you say 6 to 8 hour nap and it might sound like it's your nighttime sleep, like actual bedtime. You actually take 6 to 8 hour naps during the day. I've seen it done. And we've had friends see it done.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you have to say about that? Where does that come from?
It's been recommended to me to probably go get a blood test done.
Who recommended that to you?
Little Sparrow. Oh. She said I should probably check it out because I've been just falling asleep in random places. At people's houses and things.
Yeah, and you really enjoy those naps.
I do.
Yeah, that's okay. You know what? Sometimes you need to catch up on your sleep. And you gotta do what you gotta do. I feel your pain. I've fallen asleep reading out loud once. You were there.
I was there.
Yeah, so I understand your pain. When you're tired, you're tired.
But this is exciting to me. I like doing this.
Yeah, of course you do. And you're the star of the show, really. Everyone tunes in to hear some crazy thing that you're gonna say next. So, since our last episode where we did the top 11, our soccer picks / final penultimate battle, we received an email from our faithful listener,
Philly P.
Another one. He's got a lot to say. So do you want me to read it to you? Do you want me to give you the gist of it? Should we save it for when Jay Siegel's back, or should we just, let's just do it.
The last time we waited for Jay Siegel was like 4 weeks, a whole month went by.
Okay, we'll read Philippi's email thanking us for our last episode. He says, good morning, Cave of Solitude gang. Wanted to say a quick thank you for episode 11. You guys did great with the show topic. It was truly enjoyable to listen to all of your picks, and I hope everyone else who listened enjoyed it as well.
Mm-hmm.
He said, My favorites based on the show and hearing all of your rationales behind the picks. So he's got his favorite picks from each of us, what he appreciated. So his favorite goalie is Daphne J.
Of course.
So it's a smart pick, having the flash there. Favorite defense was Jay Siegel's defense for creativity. And I got to give him that. He rationaled.
Who was on his D again?
He had Sue Storm. He had Tara. I don't remember who else he had on there, but they were good picks. Oh, hello, Megan.
Yeah, that's right.
He had her there, and I think there was one more female, and I don't remember who it was. But there was another female character on his defense.
That's right, they were all girls.
Yeah. And it was creative, though. He did justify it.
Girl power.
That's right. His favorite offense was Eric Anthony. Thank you. He says it's very dominant up front. I think my entire team was dominant. Would crush all of you guys, but whatever. And his favorite coach, Eric Anthony.
You don't believe me? You can read it yourself.
Yeah, he says the coach needs to have a control of his team. No better pick to do that than Professor X. But now he is going to address something that he feels very passionate about. And it's directed to you, Daphne J. He says, there is one matter that must be addressed, and Daphne J had to have seen this coming.
Of course.
But the inclusion of Lionel Messi on your team, which totally allowed since it's your team, is weakening your team.
Excuse? Et moi?
The last 2 years, Messi hasn't even been the best player on Earth, never mind the comic universe. As voted on by members of the soccer community, your dearest, Cristiano Ronaldo, is the World Player of the Year for a second straight year. after putting up absolutely dominant numbers. You have the right to pick who you want, but if you're going to pick a regular mortal to play with this group of superheroes, you need to pick the best. Like it or not, the best right now is Cristiano Ronaldo. Am I biased? 100%. But that doesn't change reality. It only makes it more enjoyable. He sounds like this guy might be Portuguese. I don't know. The voting for the title was made by the captain and coach of each FIFA nation, as well as one journalist from each country. The result, Ronaldo won 37.6% of the total votes, more than doubling Messi, who won only 15.76%. He's getting down to the percentile.
I like it.
Again, your prerogative to choose Messi, but he is proving to be the inferior of the two right now. Not to mention, Ronaldo has both more of a comic superhero appearance and swagger.
Oh boy.
I actually like the rest of your team, but the inclusion of Messi knocks your team down a couple of ranks. And if, to Eric's point, this was a group of 11 to protect our loved ones and the planet from destruction, I think you may need to reconsider the Messi pick. Rant over. Love the explanations and the thought that went behind the show concept for episode 11 from all three of you. Also, Daphne J and Eric Anthony, looks like you really are a match made in space when you have so many of the same picks without conferring. Keep up the great work, you three. Looking forward to the next podcast. Philly P. So I will give you the opportunity to send a rebuttal to defend your pick of Messi, because hey, it's your team. Do you have anything to say to that?
First, I approached this. You took it to another level in saying protect the family, protect the base, protect the foundation, all this business. I was approaching it as just a friendly game of football. Just for, you know, entertainment purposes. Correct me if I'm wrong. And Philly P, you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, he will.
I don't believe I spoke on Ronaldo's skills. I don't question his skills.
No,
I understand that he's very good player. What I have an issue with is his character. I don't particularly like how he approaches certain situations when on the field.
Okay.
And I still stand by the fact that he's just a big baby.
Baby. So you think that if you had to pick a team, even though he is the best player inarguably right now in the world, right? It's pretty
And
clear.
I'm not disputing that.
But if you had to put somebody on your team, you would rather have a guy like Messi, who in your view, do you see Messi then?
I see him as someone who people on your team should have some type of leadership. And I see Messi in that category. You know, people look to him. He does the finishing move. Like, he's a completist, I find. And you could say the same thing about Ronaldo. That's fine. But I see that more in Messi than I do in Ronaldo. You touch Ronaldo, it's like someone, you know, pulled his quackish, and all of a sudden he's like crying and rolling and diving.
Is that the type of... don't know what's quackish, because you just threw that out there. It sounded like a duck was in the room. What's quackish? Explain to the people, since you're talking to Philly B.
It's underwear in Portuguese.
Okay, Portuguese. Okay.
Okay. So it's like...
Do you think that Messi
And because I took the challenge of putting a team together that was going to play a game.
Okay.
Then of course I would pick one of the best players in the world to do that because he would know how to play.
Okay.
Just like Siegel picked Cyborg, which I thought was a very very thought out
pick.
Mm. Because he had some athlete background to him.
Yeah.
Why not pick someone who knows the game, lives and breathes it, like nobody else?
So you think that on a team effort level, you would rather put Messi on your team, even though Ronaldo may be the better player right now, because you feel like
I think Messi has the proper team. Yeah, he has the proper attitude and the proper leadership to take his team.
To make
that.
People around him better.
He makes that, exactly. He makes everybody else better. He brings everyone else to their max performance. It's not just about him. He doesn't have to showboat. He doesn't have to hog the ball to get his numbers up. It's about working together as a team rather than making it a one-man show.
Okay. Well, now this has become a sports podcast. People thought we were one-dimensional. There you go. Well, Philly P, there's Daphne J's rebuttal. And the opinions expressed on this show are completely Daphne J. No, I'm just kidding. Well, it was good. Good explanation. Good rebuttal. I like that Felipe responded back and showed a little bit of his
passion. I do, too. And you know what? When I said that I liked it, while you were reading it, I did get that from Felipe. There was a passion behind it. And by no means are we offended by someone else's opinion. We welcome it, but I think it was good. He was in it. I liked it. That's what we wanted.
You know what?
But at the end of the day, on your team, do you want someone who's going to be diving or who's going to be?
I admit the fact that Ronaldo is a fantastic player. He's amazing. His skill, the things that he does on that field, he's a magician. There's no questioning that. I personally am not a fan of his person, the way he conducts himself on the field, the way you expressed it, but I can't deny his skill.
No one
I do lean more towards Messi, and you know, being from Italian background, right? We naturally don't cheer for Portugal, anyways, right? We always want to see them lose. So I was actually one time. It's documented, and I'm going to burn these pictures some way, somehow. But I was in a wedding party where the groom was Portuguese, and he made me wear a Ronaldo jersey for the photos, all the wedding party. All the guys had to do that, and I was the only one in the picture with his head down. So, you know, Philly P sounds like that type of guy who loves Ronaldo that much. But I digress. See,
you were the type of groomsman that
would do
it. It wasn't about you. It was about the rest of the team. Ronaldo would never do that. He would never bow out like that.
I digress. Okay.
Next.
Right?
Right. You don't do those stuff? Oh, because that's you and Jay Siegel's thing.
Yeah.
My bad.
No, that's okay. We could do it. I'll throw a couple Batman sound effects in there for you. You're just eating those. You're just chopping away at those cookies.
Sip up my milk now.
Okay. In some news, there's going to be, especially for you, I know Jay Siegel would appreciate this, and me and him will talk about it, but there's been a new DC animated movie coming out, Batman vs. Robin.
Yes.
And we just watched the trailer for it. What do you think of it? It's tying in the Court of Owls storyline, which you read and you thoroughly enjoyed. Give me your thoughts on it. What did you think?
I want to watch it.
Okay.
Yeah. Court of Owls, when I read it, I had to take a moment. I had to take a little bit of a break. It was really getting to me. It was almost like you were experiencing, and I don't want to spoil spoilers, but it was almost like you were experiencing exactly what Batman was experiencing, and I felt like my head was getting messed with. It was really getting to me, so I needed a minute to kind of just give it a break. So it kind of makes me a little nervous about how they're going to put that together, but
Yeah,
I want to see it.
Where would you, that storyline, Court of Owls, it's absolutely fantastic. I don't know what another word to describe it. It was the first story arc for Batman to come out of the New 52. And it was written by Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo on art. But it really, it was a game changer. It's the one thing of the New 52 that I think nobody can argue its quality. Because a lot of the New 52, people got excited in the beginning, but it's kind of lost any of its appeal.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the other books, the editorial.
Do you feel that way personally?
For some books, I can see why it's a problem. I think DC is now, they're going to do an event coming up called Convergence, where they take some of the old universe of DC characters and mesh them in to the New 52, because they realize that with some of their characters, they just didn't make it work properly. They didn't reestablish the status quo or make a new status quo for them the way that they should. And I think a big problem with that is editorial. But Batman, the Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo Batman, it's really hit a watermark that I don't know if any other Batman book in the 75 years past has been this consistently good for this long. So it's exciting that they're making a movie adapting The Court of Owls, but I have to say I don't really like that they're making it a Batman and Robin movie. I feel like they're making a continuation to Son of Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't feel that the Court of Owls book was like that.
No.
I know Damian existed in that universe,
mm-hmm.
but he wasn't a major player in that story. Nightwing was. And I would have liked them to approach it from that angle, give Nightwing a little bit more. I see Nightwing in the trailer, but I would have preferred him to give Nightwing a little bit more face time.
When I saw the trailer, I mean, I obviously I knew the title and what it was revolving, but when I saw the trailer, I was a little confused as to why Damian was in there.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. But I'm thinking, but I read Court of Owls so long ago that I'm like,
was he there?
Was he in it?
He was in the book. Like, he was in that universe.
Yeah, but for so much of it to be revolving around him. Yeah. So I couldn't recall.
No,
I'm anticipating it. I'm looking forward to it. I'm just hoping it's not a disappointment.
Yeah, I enjoyed Son of Batman, but it was a departure from the original material a little more than it needed to be. And I just don't feel like... I prefer when they adapt these stories and they change things from them, which is fine, which is good. You have to change it sometimes for the pacing. You know, take a character out, insert another one. That's okay. But I do, in this setting, with these movies, because they're adapted directly from a specific comic book story, like Dark Knight Returns, for instance, I thought that was an amazing adaptation. Because they really captured and amplified all of the points of the Dark Knight Returns and brought it to life in a way that makes you like it more.
Right.
Right? And I didn't feel that they did that so much with Son of Batman. But it was still good. It just didn't hit the mark for me the way Under the Hood did or Dark Knight did. Dark Knight Returns, I should say. So hopefully this is good, but I don't know. They're really trying to get... People are fans of Damian. They've killed him off, brought him back to life.
Oh, and I don't like Damian.
And they're trying to, like, really, I don't know, appeal to the fans maybe or shove him down your throat to make you just...
I dislike
become acquainted
him.
With him. You're kind of supposed to dislike him, but over him. Time, as you read him, you start to appreciate him.
Is that how you feel?
Yeah. Yeah, I started to like his character after.
I don't like
especially,
him.
Again, we're going off a Batman tangent. It's always on your mind. But in the pre-New 52 Batman, it was a really cool concept that Grant Morrison did, who was the guy who introduced Damian into comics. Into the story, they killed off Batman, quote unquote, air quotes, killed off Batman. He was lost in time. But
is that when he went missing and
yeah,
in the no, not the, but Dick Grayson knew he was alive and he
Tim Drake
knew he was alive, yeah. And he went looking for him,
yeah, trying to find
and
clues.
Didn't he like leave clues to himself to find himself because
yeah.
He yeah
for people to find him, yeah. But during that time that you're talking about, Dick Grayson took over as Batman. And it was really cool to see a Batman who was perfectly trained by Bruce, better than all of the other Robins. Like, he's the perfect one to become Batman, if there ever needed to be. But he's different. He's not as dark. He's not as brooding. He's not as... He doesn't need to be in the cave. Dick Grayson had a life. He smiled,
mm-hmm.
right? And mm-hmm. people noticed that. As soon as they would battle him, they're like, that's not him.
Mm-hmm.
That guy was smiling in that newspaper photo.
Right.
But his partner now was Damian,
mm-hmm.
who was like Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
Very, like, we got to take care of business. We got to be focused. And
very
so it was a juxtaposition of now Batman is saying, hey, relax, take it easy. And Robin is now saying to Batman, we got to get this done. We got to, you know, get out there and execute justice. So it was really cool to see the flip of characters. So they should. I would have liked to see them adapt that into a movie. That would have been cool.
Hmm.
But hopefully this Court of Owls, Batman versus Robin thing is good. We'll see. Any other news that you've come across that you'd like to share?
Tom Hardy's not going to be in the
Suicide Squad. Yeah, I heard that as well. I don't know why.
When they change things up midway or just as things are getting together, that makes me nervous a bit.
Yeah, it kind of doesn't make you feel like it's as solid of a plan. Like there's something, it's already having road bumps along the way. So you're wondering how good the production is going to be altogether. But it's early on. It's still in the early stages.
Do you like who's going to play him now?
Who's going to play him now?
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Who's that?
Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yeah, but that's not how you're supposed to say his name.
How are you supposed to say his name?
Helen Hulenhow. Yellen Hulenhow.
Yeah, you're going to be practicing the whole show if I don't stop. Yeah, you are saying it pretty close.
I saw an interview with him years ago, and he told his interviewist that it's
interviewer?
Not... Okay, shut up. That it was actually pronounced a different way.
Helen Hulenhow.
How'd you know?
I was there when you watched it 5 times, so learn how to pronounce it wrong. Yeah, I think he's a good actor. He's definitely got the acting chops to take over a role. So we'll see. It's too early to tell. I mean, when Heath Ledger was cast as Joker, I was like, why? Why him? Knight's Tale, 10 Things I Hate About You, that's all I was seeing. But now, Heath Ledger, you say Heath Ledger, I think the Joker, right? So you never know. You ready for Hulk Gray? Ready to get into this?
I'm here.
You're here? All right. So, this is our final installment on... Is it safe for me to conclude Jeff Loeb is your favorite comic book writer thus far? Out of all the comic books you've read, would you say you have a leaning towards him?
I think so.
Yeah? Okay, so this is your favorite writer. Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale, tag team. And now they're going to do... we're going to talk about Hulk Gray. What did you think of this book? I read it. I enjoyed it a lot. But I want to hear your thoughts because I saw that as soon as you read it, you wrote notes about it, pretty good notes, and I never got a chance to take a peek at them. So tell me. Go through your list. You take over this episode, Daphne J.
Well, I feel like I took notes on it because I didn't want to forget what I read, seeing it's been so long ago. And I find that happens sometimes, you know, even if there is a graphic novel that you are very familiar with, or no, that you enjoy thoroughly, there are certain things that you can tend to forget. So I just didn't want to lose my initial thoughts on it.
And I want to say that I apologize for not recording this earlier when you had read it fresh and I had read it a couple weeks ago as well. But I'm happy that you did take notes about it. So let me hear them. Tell me.
Well, I didn't realize it until the end, but I think out of the entire color segment, I think I would have to say that this one was my favorite of the three, which I'm kind of surprised with myself because I never thought that I would find the Hulk to be an interesting character. Like, I just always thought he was kind of just this thoughtless monster.
Yeah.
Who just did things without any sense, without any reason.
Yeah. So, I felt the same way. Like, do you know a little of the history of the Hulk? Like, what the inspiration, how they came about creating this character, like, what he's based off
of? The only thing I know about him, I guess, is what I've seen in the movies.
Yep.
And from what I read.
Okay.
You know, just basically a lab accident that happened, mm-hmm. and him just living this tumultuous life. Is that how you say the word? Yeah. And because of that, he just can't have a normal life. He can't have relationships. So it just seems that it's just a lonely road that's ahead of him.
Yeah.
Which makes it sad.
And the theme song to the Hulk TV show was called Lonely Man.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's funny you should mention that Lonely Road because it always ended with him walking on a road by himself. I don't know much about the Hulk. He's one of the mainstream characters that I never really, really got into. I really liked the TV show when I was a kid because it was superhero-based, and it was cool to see that
represented. I remember it as a kid, but I don't remember waiting to watch it the way I did, like, Adventures of Batman or the 66 Batman TV show. Like, that wasn't... I just remember it, but...
Because when we were at our age, when we were young, like, I remember there were... made-for-TV movies at the time that they were putting out for the Hulk. Because it was a television series. But then after it had... I think it had stopped. They had made specific made-for-TV movies of the Hulk. With the same actors in it. And I remember those as a kid. But I never... After that, I had never read much of him. And when I had heard of what he was... inspired by, like, it's actually really interesting. That's the one thing I do know is that Stan Lee had, during that era of Marvel, he always was very, he tried to straddle the line of, is it a superhero? Is he superhero or is he a monster?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the climate of comic book readers at the time were really into monsters. They really liked the Thing. From Fantastic Four. Yeah. So because of that, he was like, you guys like it? Oh, it is a superhero team if that's what you guys want. Oh, you don't like the superhero team? They're really monsters. Like, this guy's just a piece of rock.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's just a stretchy man. So it was kind of like trying to balance it to depending on what the reception would be. But at this time, the Thing was the most popular character in Marvel's umbrella at the time. The Thing.
Really?
Was, yeah. And... so he said, I'm going to try to stick with this monster motif. And he based it kind of on Quasimodo. I kind of feel sorry for the guy. But also Frankenstein. Frankenstein was a very big inspiration for him. Being this misunderstood monster who reacts and becomes this way because of how people treat him. Based upon how he looks. And so Stan Lee said that he always felt that Frankenstein wasn't the bad guy. He never wanted to hurt anyone,
mm-hmm.
but he groped, as he says that he groped his torturous way through a second life trying to defend himself, trying to come to terms with those who sought to destroy him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what he wanted to create in this character. And then he combined that aspect of it with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde,
mm-hmm.
a doctor who transforms into a monster.
Mm-hmm.
So
I didn't know that he was based on the Frankenstein monster.
Yeah.
We'll get into it a little bit more based on the Frankenstein thing.
Yeah. So that's what I know about the Hulk, like his backstory or his inspiration for creation. But because of that, he wasn't really a hero. He was just kind of like this reactionary character. So I wasn't, even in the movies, it's like, what's he doing other than running away from people trying to stop him? Where's the superhero aspect of this? Is it supposed to be a Marvel character? That's what I'm thinking in my head.
Yeah, because he was this mindless monster, I just felt kind of like, I thought I would have the least emotional investment in this character.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably why I left him to last. Mm-hmm. I have to say I wasn't at all interested in... And like, I did not want to read it, but I figured I read Yellow, I read Blue, I have to do Gray. Like, of course, I have to finish this.
Mm-hmm.
But then I just, after having read it, I just came to see that he's just such a tragic character. And I found myself feeling really, really badly for him. Like, really badly for him.
You find him to be, like, everybody has their character in anything that they read. That they find relatable, right? Some people say Batman's relatable, Spider-Man's relatable. Some people can even relate to Superman in some ways, right? Do you find the Hulk to be a relatable character based upon his way he acts, the way he's treated, the way he has to survive? Like, do you find a relatable aspect to him?
Me personally?
Sure.
I think so.
Yeah?
I think so. I thought it was interesting. I read somewhere that the reason why it was called Hulk Gray was because basically most of the world sees people see the world as black and white.
Mm.
It's either right or wrong.
Right.
And Ross, Thing's father there, Betty's father.
Yeah.
He was one of those people who it was good or it was bad.
Right.
And it's very easy to have that kind of opinion, right? It's harder to have, I guess, sympathy for people when you don't know their entire backstory.
Mm-hmm.
And even when you do have some kind of knowledge of where people are coming from, when you're the outside person, it's very easy to come to your own conclusions as to how something could have been handled. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
You felt that part of him to be relatable. Like, he's a misunderstood character who's being forced to become... forced to be this monster. Even though he looks it, the part...
Yeah.
It's just they're completely misunderstanding this guy and backing him into a corner, but to become this reactionary
character. I think, too, I mean, you come to learn, I mean... there's a misconception about him, right? He's this crazy, strong dude.
Right.
But he's not evil.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a gentleness to him somewhere there.
Right.
It just has to be
But when he's... reached. But he can take you out when he's in a foul mood.
It kind of reminded me of, like, seeing him and Betty Ross, who is Bruce Banner's love interest, the Hulk, when he's not the Hulk, Bruce Banner... love interest Betty Ross kind of reminded me, I don't know about you, but like King Kong.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Did you kind of see that? Like, this is the one person who can calm him down to bring the peacefulness, gentleness out of him.
I found when he was with Betty, that's where you felt the most, well, for me, felt the most sympathy for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt sad because there was an innocence about him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And... it was almost like, what was his name? Was he captain or general or what?
General Ross.
General Ross. He was very abusive
mm-hmm.
and relentless
mm-hmm.
to him and very cold.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like the Hulk was like a child, you know, kind of just throwing this tantrum.
Yeah.
And then someone kind of just taking advantage of that.
Yeah.
I mean, by no means would I ever put up with a child who's throwing a fit. That I would be the last person to do that. But you, if you understand why something is happening or what's triggering that
mm-hmm.
that break, that meltdown, you try to handle it a certain way. But Ross was just relentless and evil. Like, he was just... I despised him. Every which way.
Yeah.
I did not like him. I'm sure he was written to be hated that way.
Mm-hmm.
But he was just so... he's such a heartless man.
Yeah. Did you notice that... or remember that portion of the book where Betty says... or when Bruce says that she probably was able... because she learns later on that Bruce is the Hulk. She doesn't know it in this book particularly...
mm-hmm.
that it's Bruce who's still somewhere inside this monster. And Bruce says to his therapist, because the book, just for those who might be confused, the book starts with and ends with Bruce Banner speaking to a therapist.
Who's also his friend.
Who's also his friend. And he's just basically telling, this again is hearkening back to the very, very early stages of the Hulk. Of when he comes to be after that freak accident. And it's almost like an origin story in a way. So if anybody wants to mm-hmm. read a good Hulk origin story, this mm-hmm. would be a good book to read. It has all the key players there. Rick Jones is there. Betty Ross is there. General Ross is there. And it's kind of like a combination of the first two movies I found, where he's on the run from General Ross, but also having that relationship with Betty, the way, like, that scene where they're in the cave together and it's raining.
I have to ask you before you go on, was this released before the movie came out or after?
Which one? Which
the, movie? The
Incredible Hulk with Ed Norton? I think this was before.
Was it with Ed Norton? Yeah, Norton took her to the cave, right?
I think so. I'm not 100% sure. I'm going to check. But yes, it was.
What was?
This book was written before.
Oh, so then that scene was obviously... Yeah. Or maybe this inspired. Was based on that. The movie was based on the graphic novel.
Portions of it, for sure, yeah. But, sorry, going back to my original point, he says to the therapist at the end of their session, he's like, maybe she saw the monster in me was something that she could relate to because of the monster that she had loved before, which was her father. So it's really trying to say, who is the monster in this book? Is it the human who is trying to protect mankind from this beast? Or is it the Hulk who is, you know, who's prevented someone else from getting hit by the gamma rays, which was Rick Jones in the field where they were doing the gamma bomb? Bruce Banner protects him, but he becomes this freak. This monster. So who's the real monster here? So that was something to think about.
I thought that was...
very...
that, beyond that, actually, I felt really, really bad for him there. Because in that moment, he comes to the conclusion that she loved him for all the wrong reasons. Because...
yeah.
When he comes to realize that despite this terrorizing person that lived inside him, she still cared for him. But... that was the type of person that she lived with. Her father was a complete jerk.
Yeah.
He was terrible with her. He was verbally abusive, didn't show any emotion. Man. Just a terrible person. Yeah. But regardless of his flaws, she loved him.
Right.
I think there was a point in the book where I think the Hulk was about to take her father down. And she's like, no, please. He's my father.
Yeah.
And he's like, but he hurts you. Like, I think the Hulk said, Ross hurts Betty. And she's like, but I love him anyway.
Yeah.
And that's when it kind of triggers something and he doesn't do anything to him.
Right.
But then Bruce comes to understand that, well, it's only because she has put up with this type of relationship for so long that that's why she accepts me, or accepts the monster that I am, because that's all she knows, that's what she associates me with. So I thought that was terrible.
These three books, as much as they're superhero comic book stories, they're very analytical what makes a person tick, what makes them become that way. When you think of Daredevil, Yellow, the relationship he had with his dad, and speaking to Karen and all the losses that he suffers, how it makes him resilient. Same with Spider-Man, how the responsibility is bestowed upon him. He feels he's got this responsibility in life regardless of what he loses. But this one I felt was the most analytical, the most introspective, that makes you really try to understand people's behavior in just your everyday life, because you're never gonna have like these type of actual people. You're never gonna have a Spider-Man or a Daredevil or even a Hulk, but you have analogs of these type of characters, people who become somewhat monstrous and you write them off immediately. But it's like, why are they like that? What makes them like that? What makes this person still love that person, even though they appear to be so horrible, right? And I don't know if it was mentioned in this book, but the Hulk, he came from an abusive home. His father was abusive.
I don't think it was in this book.
So, what he becomes when he does get angry, that all that rage, all that anger, all that violence stems from that history of being a child in an abusive home, seeing his mother get beaten, and being in fear of his father. And it all comes out when he becomes the Hulk. Bruce Banner is this meek, meager, mild, you know, scientist, but he can't control his rage once he gets the gamma radiation. So it kind of adds another layer to this character. He's not just a monster because he's been exposed to the radiation.
Which then, though, at the same time, as much as I sympathize for him, and I feel bad. I feel sometimes, though, and I've said this before, that obviously everything, what people have experienced, it molds them into the person they are today. Mm-hmm. But I applaud those that have made the effort to break that mold and become better.
Right.
Or to not let those events break them or affect them in a negative way. Because it could go either way. You could say, you know what, I was abused all my childhood. That's all I know. And so then you go ahead and you do that to the next generation. You do that to your kids. You can either say, this is the life I lived. I know the pain. And so I'm going to approach it differently. I don't want my child to feel what mm-hmm. I did, what mm-hmm. I went through. That doesn't mean that you're going to let them get away with murder. But there's a different approach to the discipline that you want to, you know.
Yeah, the way you approach it is going to be different. But I think to get to that point, though, it's not going to be as simple as, even though I went through this, I'm not
going to affect me. No, and by no means am I saying that that's how it is. But at the same time, it's a very sensitive subject, right? Because everybody has gone through
something.
Some type of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And your trauma may not be my trauma, but you have what has affected you. I've gone through what has affected me. But that doesn't give me an excuse to
act how any which way you want to act.
No, I just can't be disrespectful. I can't just step on anybody when I feel like it. Like, I can't just, this is what I want when I want it. And if not, all hell's going to break loose. Because that's not how the world works.
No, it doesn't justify. If you commit a crime, even though you have this background, it doesn't change the crime you committed, but there is more of a...
But there's other elements to it.
You can't judge that person the same way.
No.
And I found the Hulk, when the issue with Iron Man, when Iron Man shows up to try to stop him, and he says, he tells that story about the collie being
abused
by his owner.
Yeah.
And the owner doesn't shoot the dog or hurt the
dog. Tell a story. Somebody knows.
Okay, so the Hulk says, I read something once. It was about a dog. A collie, I think. He says, it's one of those horrible things you hear about as a child that it stays with you your entire life and you're not entirely sure why.
And he was relating the story to the therapist.
Yes, he was telling the story to the therapist. He said, the dog's owner tied the collie to a tree in his yard. And he said, then the owner took a gun, aimed it in the direction of the dog.
I have to say, at this point,
I couldn't. Me do neither. But then he said, the bullet drilled into the tree trunk, bark splintering everywhere, and the dog, this collie was terrified, traumatized. The gunshots, the tree shattering, every instinct telling this animal to run, but the rope held tight. No matter what the dog tried to do, it couldn't run away. As the collie strained against the leash, the collie nearly choking him, the owner loaded the gun again. He fired the gun again. Not at the dog, but at the tree, spraying bark across the lawn. He just kept firing, terrorizing the dog. Blam, blam, blam. And then this went on for days, this torture to the animal. The animal wasn't getting shot, but it was being terrified, traumatized. And eventually, for whatever reason, he decided it was time to untie the dog. And the first thing the dog does when he's free of the rope is he bites the owner's gun hand off in order to protect himself, tearing through the flesh and bone. And then the therapist says to him, so in this story, between you and General Ross, which one of you is the dog and which one of you is the owner? And he said, honestly, there are days I can't tell the difference. So it really was one of those powerful moments to make you think, like, there's always a reason why people act a certain way. And it's worse when a person acts that way just because they have a malice intent inside of them. But usually there's more to that individual.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you get from, after reading this book, seeing that the Hulk, for one, is a schizophrenic. right? He's purposely written like that, to have multiple personalities. Even the Hulk himself...
hates Bruce Banner.
He hates Bruce Banner.
I don't understand, though, how that... how?
Because he doesn't like that weak part of him. That's a weak...
so he knows... so Bruce Banner... Bruce knows he's the Hulk. But the Hulk doesn't know.
You know, he just hates that person, that weak person who suppresses the Hulk from coming out. Because Bruce, all those years... has suppressed that violence, that rage, that traumatizing background. But the gamma radiation, you know, turns him into this powerful beast, this unstoppable force. So even later on in comic book continuity, they write the Hulk having different personalities. He doesn't just become the Hulk and that's it. He also starts to get different versions of himself that Bruce can't help.
Yeah, but I thought in this novel he had different personalities.
He did. I'm saying later on they write versions of the Hulk that are different from him, the actual other, like this Hulk, okay. One who has.
Because I found this Hulk, like I said, I found him to be, yeah, he was this monstrous thing, and there was Bruce Banner, but there was also this part of him that just wanted a friend.
Yes, there's like a gentle side. He was
very, very sweet, very, which, going back to the Frankenstein thing that I also read up, at Jeff Loeb, it was based on the Frankenstein monster, and apparently in the James Whale 1932 version of Frankenstein, he apparently had befriended a little girl who he unintentionally kills. Hmm. And he didn't realize this. And it was kind of like when he had that little bunny rabbit, it was soft, and he called it his friend. Mm-hmm. And as he was petting him, because he doesn't obviously realize his own strength,
yeah.
He ends up killing the rabbit. Yeah. Yeah. And then he feels sad that he squished him, because now this one friend that he had is no longer with him. So I found that he was this big teddy bear too that wanted to be loved. He wanted to have a relationship, even though he was this tank.
Yeah.
He took care of Betty the same way.
Yeah.
You know, when he saw that she was hurt, he wanted to fix her. When he saw that she was bleeding, he wanted to take care of her. When she was being abused by her father, he said, "You're being hurt. Let me protect you. Let me help you." So it was just, I don't know, this was a heavy one for me, I felt.
Yeah, it's definitely emotional. It pulls at the heartstrings, because you see, like I said, I always saw the Hulk as like this, like, what is he? He's a monster, he's on the run, like, big deal. He's not a hero, like, but there's a lot of psychological study to him, and...
which is interesting that you say that, because he was literally in a session.
Yeah, and that's the thing I like about this era of Jeff Loeb's writing, what he did with the Batman, what he did with these Colors books, is he really dug deep into the personality of these characters, what really makes them tick, the emotional side of them, trying to make them a character that you can relate to or see, understand them a little bit more, feel for them. Almost pulls at the heartstrings in every book, makes you almost... shed a tear for Daredevil and his dad, Peter Parker and his uncle, or Gwen Stacy. Like, there's so many things that happen to these guys that just make you feel for them and admire their ability to get back on their feet or to overcome.
And although they're superheroes, right?
Yeah, but in this case,
their events, their relationships are. What is relatable?
Yeah, that's it. There's something to gain from that part. Like, you're never going to swing between buildings, like I always say, but there's other parts of your life that can be comparable, relatable. And rising from the ashes in certain senses, in certain cases, makes you that hero.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you admirable to others around you. Like, how many people do you admire? You see what they go through in life and what they overcome.
And those are people that have been brave enough to express...
right.
Their trauma.
Yeah.
Imagine those that have kept it to themselves. You don't know what they went through. Everyone and they still wake up and they put a smile on their face and they keep going.
Yeah.
I think everyone's a hero in their right. in it's one true. Way or another.
It's true. Sometimes you just got to look a little harder mm-hmm. to see it. Any other notes you got there that you haven't shared with us? Nothing?
I think I covered them.
I think you covered it? You think we covered the book well enough? Is there anything else you want to say about the book? What did you think about the art in this book? We always talk about the art. It's Tim Sale again. Did you find this one to be most fitting for his style, since he's known for drawing more of that grotesque, edgy, hard-looking characters? Almost like he's good at drawing ugly people. I know it sounds stupid to say that. You don't want anybody's art to be ugly. But in this case, like, his art isn't immediately attractive.
No, but I think that's pretty evident in all three graphic novels that we covered.
Do you think it was best suited, though, for drawing the Hulk, is what I'm saying? His style of art, capturing that monstrosity, that scariness, that Frankenstein.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think of the colors in it? It's very, very muted, mm-hmm. very darker.
Yeah. Very gray.
Did you ask any questions about... Were you wondering why the Hulk was gray? Because he's green. The Hulk's green.
Yeah.
Did it explain to you in the intro as to why he's gray?
Was it in the intro or in the ending? I don't remember now.
I think it's in there. It's got to be in there. Because most people associate the Hulk being green. But originally, Stan Lee...
Made him gray or something.
Said, yeah, he wanted the Hulk to be gray because he wanted a color... that did not suggest any particular ethnic group. So he wanted this guy to be gray. But when they colored the book, they were having problems getting a gray coloring, which ended up being different shades of gray, and sometimes even green. And then eventually Lee just chose to change the skin color to green. But originally it was supposed to be gray. The Hulk was going to be...
But I thought they explained something in the thing where... He first was gray, and then something happened in his skin.
You mean in the story-wise?
In this story, I thought I read something.
You're probably right. But as far as the character history, to bring it back to like the original event of what happened, that was the reason why they wanted to take it back to being Hulk gray. And it worked out perfectly with what you explained before of how everybody usually tries to see things in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes it easy for us to see life like that.
Yeah.
But... the green, like I was telling you, those were the other personalities of the Hulk, the schizophrenia. So the green Hulk acts differently from the gray Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
And then there became a red Hulk later on down the line.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's what I was saying. There was different Hulks amongst themselves that were in Bruce Banner. The one Hulk graphic novel that I did read was Peter David, who wrote over 100 issues of the Hulk in his tenure on the book. And... he turned Hulk into... he was a little less powerful, but he was more of a... He could speak like normal,
mm-hmm.
but more like a bully, like a thug. And he ended up, for a while, becoming a enforcer in Las Vegas, I think, to the mob. So it was a very different characterization of what the Hulk was. And it was it literally happened. There was Bruce Banner during the day, but when, you know, the daytime reached, there was a certain hour of day, if the sun was setting, the Hulk would start to come out. He couldn't stop it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was almost like a werewolf type of thing, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong, but I remember he was completely out of control. He didn't have a choice that this Hulk was going to come out and take over.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that schizophrenia aspect of him. So, yeah, there's a lot, I guess, to explore in that character that I always kind of dismissed. But it was good. It was a good read.
Mm-hmm.
Would you recommend this book to anybody? Would you read it again, or would you read Hulk again? I know that's a lot of questions, but...
Would I recommend this one in particular? Yeah. I would.
Okay.
I enjoyed it that much to say.
It was your favorite of the three.
If I were to rank them, I think I would do Hulk Gray, followed by Spider-Man Blue and Daredevil Yellow. And that's by no means to say that this was like... Daredevil Blue was garbage. It was just... I think because, like I said, it was a character where I knew nothing about. I had no emotional investment in it. I didn't care to read it. I left it to last on purpose.
Right.
I wasn't at all interested.
And so what surprised you the most?
Pleasantly surprised.
Okay.
Yeah. And I felt, like I said, I know this is a fictional character and what we do here is for fun. Mm-hmm. But I really felt... I felt a little heavy.
Yeah, reading it. It got you emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's good writing, right? Even though they're comic books, they can still, when they're written well, a good story is a good story. And you get these experiences from them.
Yeah.
It's a fun ride along the way because they've got these magnificent powers. And, you know, sometimes you're taking into space or, you know, you're flying through a city and there's action. But the best type of characters are the ones that hit you emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And this book definitely did that. It was a good experience. Well done. You've read a lot of Marvel. Mm-hmm. You said you never would, and you've gotten... You did the Civil War, which was like a lot of the Marvel Universe. Then you did Daredevil, Spider-Man, and the Hulk. Would you read Hulk again?
If Jeff Loeb writes it, yeah.
He did a pretty extensive run on the Hulk. I heard mixed things about it. I don't know if it was as introspective as this one.
Mm-hmm.
But the Peter David stuff is actually really good. It's like the first 9 or 10 issues that I read of it, it's like him being on the run, like a road trip, but being a fugitive still, but on more of a... smaller scale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, him and Rick Jones and another guy are in a van traveling across the country trying to escape from the Hulkbusters. And the way that he characterizes the Hulk is really entertaining and
fun. Hulkbusters? Yeah. Like Ghostbusters?
Kind of like that, but it's a squad to specifically try to stop the Hulk. Yeah, it's
interesting. Right, like Ghostbusters.
Yeah, exactly. And the Hulkbusters, you're going to see Tony Stark wearing his Hulkbuster Iron Man suit in the new Avengers movie. Trying to take down the Hulk himself.
In the new one?
Yeah.
That's coming out?
Yeah, Avengers. It's in the trailer. They've released another trailer. I don't know if I showed it to you yet, but it shows him and the Hulk, Iron Man and the Hulk fighting. And it's the part that everybody's waiting for, seeing one of the Hulkbuster suits.
Between the two, who do you favor?
The two what?
Iron Man and Hulk.
If
there's going to be a battle between them two, who are you siding on?
Who's going to win or who do I want to win?
Who are you siding on? Who do you want?
Oh, man. I'm scared of the Hulk. He needs to be stopped. But...
But I think the... But why does he have to be... Like, you know what I mean? It's like all he wanted to do was to be left alone. Just leave him alone.
No, and you know what, Bruce... The thing
and
is...
I felt like Tony, in this graphic novel, he was just a bully. Like, I think sometimes he's just
a bully.
Between the two of them, if you were to ask me, I know you didn't answer it because you took too long, I want the Hulk to win. The man just wants to be left alone.
True.
And if everyone was just to honor his wishes, then he wouldn't turn into this crazy, monstrous thing.
Yeah.
It's like me. I don't like people. If you don't want to hear what I have to say, then don't bother me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I feel for the Hulk too. Like, I just wish...
And Tony's such a bully coming in with his mighty little machine suit there. Go away.
I think it really all depends on what the Hulk is doing and how he's being written. If he's written in a way where, like, I like the part at the Avengers where he basically turned into the Hulk by choice. And he says, I'm always upset. I'm always angry.
Yeah.
And he just went for it to help.
Yeah.
And even though he punched Thor
but
in the face.
But that's what I'm saying. I think like I've said before, I think there's a misconception to the type of character that he is. I don't think he's just this crazy mindless thing if that's what you are presented initially. But I think he's aware of what's going on around him, which is why he's your goalie, right? He knows what to do.
Yeah, no, I would probably go for the Hulk.
But, like, didn't he save Tony in the Avengers movie? Like,
yeah, he
was
did.
There for him.
You know, that's the part of the Hulk that I like, because he makes me laugh at the same time. So it all depends on what the characterization is of him. But I have a new appreciation for him that I didn't before, which I'm happy about. It's kind of cool.
I just feel like I have sympathy for him.
And you're meant to. You're meant to. You have to. Because Bruce Banner is not... The way he's presented in this book, he's not an intentionally bad person.
No.
But it makes... You know what? This is the type of thing that you get introduced to a new character that you would have never thought of trying before. And it opens up the doors to a whole new universe. Like, I would always stick to my two characters in the past, like Superman, Batman. That was my safety zone, my safety net. This is what I like. Even if the story's bad, they're still my guys. I'll like it. Because, you know... But when I started to try different things, I realized just the wealth of stuff that's out there, that there's so much more to enjoy. There's so much more good stories that I'm depriving myself from because I don't want to go there. But when you read something like Hulk Gray or Spider-Man Blue, you realize, like, there's so much to enjoy from these characters. You just gotta give them a chance. So I'm having an urge now to read my other Hulk books that I have on the shelf that have just been sitting there. See how they go. They're a little bit older. They're from the 80s. I know you're not into the 80s stuff, but I am. So this has been episode 12, The Cave of Solitude. We'll wrap it up there. Before we go, I've been meaning to do this every episode and I've been forgetting lately. Send a shout out to Cyber City Comics, located on Steeles and Carpenter. That's my local comic shop. Owner's name is Daryl. Go check the store out if you are in the greater Toronto area. It's a good store. He's a great owner.
And go on Wednesdays.
And go on Wednesdays? Why Wednesdays?
Because that's when you go.
And you might meet me if you want to.
No, but doesn't he have like a something special on Wednesdays?
Wednesdays is new comic book day.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, that's the reason to go on Wednesdays.
Hype it up.
People, if they know about comic books.
What was that?
People should know. People should know that Wednesdays is new comic book day. Come on.
Is that a universal thing? Is that everywhere?
Yeah, it's everywhere. Oh, that's a universal thing, yeah. So, Cyber City Comics and the GTA. Contact us, please. I forgot to mention it last time. Can go to caveofsolitude.com. Can download our episodes from there. iTunes as well. Cave of Solitude on iTunes. Leave us a review. Let us know what you think of the show. It helps us get the show out there. As well as sending us an email at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. We do read your emails on the show.
Thank you, Philly P. For your relentless
support. We do appreciate it. And we will take your suggestions and do shows about them, right?
Yeah.
Daphne's got the last piece of cookie in her mouth. Next time we come back, we're going to have Jay Siegel here. Daph, you're going to be on that show as well?
Yes,
we're
going to
do the Batman, Untold Tales of Batman.
I'm reading it
Untold
now.
Legend of Batman, I should say. Mm-hmm. And we're going to get into that book. So thank you for listening, and we will talk soon.
Ciao.
So, what's the next Marvel book you think you'll give a chance to read?
Ugh, I don't know.
Will you try Daredevil?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I don't know, I feel like I need to go back to DC. I'm doing the Untold Legend of Batman right now.
Yeah, but after that. I'm saying Marvel specifically because you've never really gotten into that universe before until now. So, how about Captain America? That would be good. I think you might like Captain America.
If he's written like he was written in Civil War, then yes.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't recommend anything different than that.
What would it be?
Well, we could start from the Winter Soldier.
You did say that was pretty good.
But from there, like, the stories that take place after that Ed Brubaker wrote are just... It's like the movie. It's like Jason Bourne and a superhero combined. Like, that level of action and espionage and... You know, S.H.I.E.L.D., it's wicked. It's really good.
I feel bad for Jason Bourne.
Why?
This poor guy. Same guy. He wants to be left alone.
So he's like the real Hulk.
Oh.
Nobody just leave the guy. But he wants to know who he is. He's a threat. He doesn't even know how powerful he is. Why would I want Jason Bourne?
Because I just watched the movies. It's fresh in my mind. And you brought him up.
I was comparing Captain America to Jason Bourne. At least you didn't bring up Batman for a change. You always bring everything back to Batman.
I had nothing to do with that the first time around. Or the second or the third. You bring him up.
Yeah, I like him. He's good.
You're wearing his t-shirt.
You're wearing his toque in the house.
It was chilly.